Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Leaf Card, your home for Canadian soccer news and views. I'm your host, Jacob Charouk. On today's show, we'll be covering Canadian Premier League's midseason and the transfer market, and also the Canadian national team's performance in the Gold Cup's group stage. But first, here's your fixtures rundown. Canada defeats Cuba 4-2. Vancouver FC defeats Halifax Wanderers 2-1. Pacific FC gets defeated by Calgary FC 1-2. Toronto FC gets defeated by St. Louis City SC 0-1. Club de Foot Montreal gets defeated by Atlanta United 0-1. Vancouver Whitecaps gets defeated by Seattle Sounders 2-3. And now, having a good special guest, Holly Williams, that is an editor from One Soccer. So, say hello.
Hello, everybody, and thank you, Jacob, for having me on your podcast.
Great to having you. And also another special guest is Lyle Rich. And so, I might butcher your last name, but...
That's okay.
So, you could actually say hello for saying your full name.
Hello, everybody. I'm Lau Robshaw. I'm a content producer at 640 Toronto. Not that special of a guest, but I am a guest.
Well, everyone's a special guest for this episode. And so we're going to be talking about the Canadian Premier League's midseason. So, as noticed, Pacific FC is first place. Second spot, would have to say, what was it? I think York United is second place, isn't it? And Forge FC... third spot, Calgary FC is fourth. And fifth spot, Halifax Wanderers. Sixth spot is Valor FC. Seventh spot, Vancouver FC. And last place, Atletico Ottawa. So I think lots of people were thinking about Atletico Ottawa since they were first spot from last season. So Holly, what's your thoughts on Atletico Ottawa? From first spot coming to last spot in this season, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's quite a shock, I think. You know, on paper, you wouldn't expect them to be in the very last position of the league right now, pretty much a little over halfway through the season. I think their new signings, which I'm sure we'll get to later on in the show, might help. They just have no solidity in the team. There's no continuity. They haven't been very consistent at all. You know, their home record isn't that great, which, you know, is always a shock in sports when home records aren't good. But I think you had to give some credit and some leeway to Carlos Gonzalez. You know, he took them from the very bottom of the league to the top last season. But you expect them to stay there. And that just hasn't been the case this season at all.
So do you think Atletico Ottawa might actually come back next part of the season?
It'll be a very difficult feat for them. They are currently sitting on 12 points. They only have 3 wins. And they to make it to a playoff position, they are going to have to do extremely well for the rest of the season, which might happen with their new signings. They have a bit of more solidity in the midfield now. But I personally don't see this happening, because the top 4 right now have looked and stayed pretty solid, minus Forge. They've been a little bit rocky, but to make it into a playoff spot will be very difficult.
So what do you think about that, Lyle?
I think she nailed right on the head. They're fishtailing is what it kind of looks like. Like, you're just going back and forth between being amazing last season to abysmal this season, and it's a lack of consistency is exactly what it is. Like, nail was right on the head there. It's exactly what I was going to say. Going out and doing 3-3-6, that's just I would rather have I would rather have more losses than draws, if it makes any sense, and especially in this situation where they only have 12 points. Draws at this point are kind of a non-issue. You got to get W's. That's the only thing that's going to dig them out of the hole, but it's a deep hole. I can't see them getting out of this by the end of the season at this point. It's the damage has been done.
And it's not just that. You have basically a coach, Carlos Gonzalez, who actually won Coach of the Year from last season, and also making it to the finals. Also being the regular season champions. You're not actually going to recover from that. But we could go on right now to Vancouver FC. So could they still have a chance to be in the playoffs for this one? Since they're right now they're their first year, they're the expansion team. What do you think about this, Holly?
I mean, Vancouver FC have done surprisingly well for being an expansion side this season. I think when an expansion team does come in, their expectations aren't super high, but I think they are where they're supposed to be, if not doing better than what you'd expect from an expansion side. They are a very young team. A couple weeks ago, they recorded the youngest team in CPL history. But I think they are doing a very good job for where they are. I know, you know, seventh, it's second last in the table, but for what you'd expect, I think they're doing a good job.
Definitely agree with that statement. Even for example, they're a young team. Mm-hmm. They have, for example, TJ. Keep on forgetting his Tahid.
Tahid.
Mm-hmm. And right now he has 2 goals. He's now, I think he was the one. He broke the record like from Antoine Coupland, and now he's now holding the record as the youngest goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we see a lot of potential from Canadian Premier League that are giving that lifeline from young players. And for you, Lyle, what do you think about Vancouver FC?
Well, it's true that when you're building an expansion team, you need to kind of put your best foot forward. A lot of people expect now expansion teams to do well. In almost every league now, when expansion teams come in, it's a pretty good season to start out. It's no more sitting at the bottom of the doldrums for a while. So for a team like them in a league like this, they've done quite well. They hadn't allowed more than one goal for a long time there until they got thrashed 5-0 at home once. I think it was against Ottawa. But they have been doing well for such a young squad that was put in the position that they're in. Anyone that can go out and say that they're the youngest team in a league and still competitive and not dead last, I think you're on the right foot.
So now, sixth spot, Valor FC, in a large stadium. So what's your thoughts on Valor FC?
Valor FC, for me, has always been a pretty subpar team. They've always been just on the outside looking in. They've always just missed the playoff. I know the structure has changed almost every year of the CPL's existence for playoffs and such, but they've always just been on the cusp, and it's looking like they're gonna stay there. I don't think I see them. They might get a playoff spot this year because it's there's more playoff spots to give away this season. But I mean, since Phil DeSantos took over, I think he has done a good job, and they have been better. But you know, like I said, they've come across a lot of injuries. They always have quite a few injuries, so there's always changes that need to be made by Phil DeSantos, and I think they're unexpected changes. They've also lost key players over the years. But I don't see them making it into the playoffs this year. I think they'll be right on the cusp once again.
No question about it. Like, for example, you have one of their best key players, Andrew Jean-Baptiste from Haiti. And Valor has always been that team that has been that team basically been ignored. That you're going to be in the, you might be in the playoffs one season or maybe not, but they need that boost to actually make the playoffs. And Lyle, what do you think about Valor FC?
I agree with the fact that they're very forgettable. They're one of the ones that you don't necessarily think about immediately when you think about the Premier League. You don't, oh yeah, yeah, Valor. No, everybody immediately goes to Pacific or Calgary. But I think they were kind of on the back foot right from the start. They started with so many injuries. Baptiste was out at the beginning. They lost, I think it was like four or five defenders have been hurt over the course of the season. So they're in the exact position you expect them to be in, which mm-hmm. is that almost dreaded middle, like those middle three where it's just you're not going anywhere. You're kind of deadlocked there. So it's expected, but at the same time, like it really is not 100% the fault of the quality of the play there. It's just they've injuries, and they're in a bad market as well for it. So they don't necessarily have all the cards going in their favor, but it's not from lack of trying. You almost feel bad for them a little bit.
A little bit.
So now Halifax Wanderers, the best team that has the best fan base, fifth spot. What do you think about Halifax Wanderers?
Halifax Wanderers have definitely, they've climbed the table in recent weeks. They went on a couple, they have a win streak going on. As you said, they have a great, great home crowd. Probably, I would arguably say the best in the CPL. And they've looked impressive under Patrice Geyser. You know, the last couple of seasons under Stephen Hart, you hate to say it because Stephen Hart is an amazing coach and he's, you know, a Canadian legend. But they were very boring the last couple of seasons. They were not fun to watch. They could not score. But this season, they've really turned it around. And, you know, there was a lot of changes going into this season for Halifax. They had offloaded a lot of players, brought in a lot of new faces. Some of their core stayed together. But for the most part, it was almost like a brand new team. So for where they are right now in the table, fifth place, I mean, there's a lot of room for parity here in the CPL. And looking at the table, the 5, 6, 7, and 8 spots are very close. You know, Atletico Ada has a win, a couple wins under their belt. They'll jump. Some teams will fall. But I think Halifax this year have the potential to make the playoffs.
Well, no question about it when you think about Halifax Wanderers. But there's some of them I kind of agree with or kind of and also disagree with. Sometimes they actually, like for example, Halifax Wanderers were the finalists in the second season, which had to be a bubble, no question about it. And then later you have a dismal season with Halifax Wanderers that couldn't do a great performance with it. But you think about the fans, they are really supportive of it, and that speaks a lot for Halifax Wanderers. It really shows how Halifax Wanderers really takes care about this. If you even show like Toronto FC, for example, going on a whole losing streak, but you still have 20,000 fans, but you still and Halifax Wanderers, well, you might lose on a losing streak, you're still gonna sold out mm-hmm. for it. And Lau, what do you think about Halifax Wanderers?
I love the East Coast. I'm from the East Coast, so I am a little biased here, but it does show the fan support. About when I go home, when Patrice got hired as the head coach, that was front page news in New Brunswick, which isn't even the same province, but because it's the East Coast team, It did make front page news in New Brunswick, which means a lot. That just shows how much support there is. That is, if you build it, they will come in the East. And the Wanderers are an absolutely fantastic example of that. They have gone from what was a blip at the beginning, and during the dismal season even, there was still just so much excitement about there being this Premier League team, actual high-octane sport in the city of Halifax that isn't the Mooseheads. So when they have gone on this this recent winning streak and there's been a real invigoration, I was home to New Brunswick not long ago, and there were so many Wanderers jerseys, and it's great to see the support of a sport that isn't hockey in the East getting so much traction. And it is. Fan support means a lot for teams in their position where they're still relatively new and trying to kind of climb their way up and see if they can hang with those top tier teams. Fan support sometimes can be that that tip over the edge.
I see a lot from it when they signed this Patrice. And I think there's a lot of history of it. Like, he was the coach from Vaudreuil. And they had a battle with Halifax Wanderers of Stephen Hart. And Von Azzurri actually almost beated Halifax Wanderers. But Halifax Wanderers beated them by a way of goals in 2019 of the Canadian Championship. So there is a lot of connection of why they wanted him. But it's not just that. They brought in some players from Von Azzurri. So I think that fans got a lot of connection and got some respect of Patrice. So I have to give some credit what Halifax Wanderers is doing for this season. So I do think they're in the right track.
Absolutely.
And now we go fourth spot. So Forge FC, what do you think about them?
Oh, I think there's a lot to say about Forge FC right now. Not a great start to the season. And halfway, you're looking at fourth in the table. I mean, they're not far. They're not far off from the top. Like, the top of half of the table is also, you know, fairly close. But from three-time Canadian Premier League champions, I think you expect more. And the thing is, Forge, every single year, have always kept their core. And they have a really, really strong core. But their offense this season has been, they've been ghosts. They can't score, which is very surprising because their forwards in previous seasons have been runners for the Golden Boot. And this season, they just cannot find the back of the net. They've been very unfortunate in most of their games. I mean, I think with Forge and Bobby, they always find a way. They always find a way out of sticky situations. So is it surprising that Forge are in fourth place right now? Absolutely. But do I think it's going to stay this way for the rest of the season? No. I think, as always, they will climb to the top. I think maybe not the very top, but I think second to third is where they'll finish the season.
Well, definitely agree with it. But anything could change around with Forge FC.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really competitive.
Yeah.
And for you, Lyle, what do you think about Forge FC right now being fourth?
I think it's a bit of a championship hangover. Honestly, like, you ride high for so long, there has to be a season that comes to a lull. Even if you have all the talent in the world and you don't touch anything, sometimes it just doesn't happen. Sometimes the gods see it in another way. I think Pacific is the final boss right now of the league, but I completely agree. I don't see them sticking in fourth, especially when the point spread is only 5 points between fourth and first. There's going to be so much jockeying position between the second, third, and fourth position here in the final half of the season. It's going to be almost like a Yahtzee dice throw to see where those three end up in that run. But I don't see Forge being fourth. I see them probably being third. I'd guess third and put money on it if I could. But,
well, going to third spot, York United. What do you think about that? What do you think the performance there, Ollie?
You know, with York United, I find on paper, if looking at them in third position, I'm not saying they don't deserve it, because obviously this season they have been They've been playing well. They've been playing pretty decent. I think some of their wins come from games where it didn't look like they would win. And, you know, there's been a couple games where, especially against their last one against Forge in Hamilton, you know, like a 93rd minute strike from outside of the box wins them the game. So there's definitely been games and, you know, 3 points that they've got that you wouldn't, it wasn't looking like they would win and they won. So I think third is, I'm a bit surprised going into the season. I wouldn't have placed them at the top, near the top, halfway or, you know, near the end of the season, but I think it's deserved. And, you know, Martin Nash has done well this season. And I think he's, you know, the team is starting to come alive a little bit. Cause I always felt that York United was, it was always lacking something. And I know they're in a tough market here in, you know, the GTA with Toronto FC as their big competitor in the MLS. So it is a tough market, but I think, and they don't always have the best audience, but I think where they are right now, it's pretty deserved.
I agree with that. Like York United is being one of the most underrated teams in the market of the Greater Toronto Area. I just feel like for Toronto FC fans, if you don't want to see the whole losing streak, there's always York United that you want to see. For example, you have Michael Petrasso, you have Mobo Bully, you even have Dwayne De Rosario's son playing there, Jose De Rosario. You have a potential good team. And I would say that York United might not just stay where they are. They could actually be like one of the top two teams in there. They do have that potential, and they could still have, for example, I would have to give some credit to Martin Nash on this one. I believe that Martin Nash maybe could actually be one of that coach of the year nominees.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think about York United?
Well, I think you guys are right when you say that the market kind of shoots them in the foot a bit. You're competing against Toronto FC, BMO Field, all the money in the world behind them of MLSE. But I actually think that in there lies one of their best strengths. I think the lack of pressure from the fans on York United has a lot to do with how well they're doing right now. It's not like other Toronto teams. You don't have an immense amount of pressure, an immense amount of scrutiny on absolutely everything you do. Every other team, every transfer you make, every missed goal opportunity, there's 6 million tweets about it, and the city immediately jumps on their back. There's 3 articles about it in every newspaper. York United FC does not have that problem, and you're seeing the benefits of that right here. They have a good coach, they have good team composition, and they're just quietly in third place and only 4 points away from first place. I think that the fan support is obviously needed in some cases, but here, the fact that they're in such a big market and kind of still flying under the radar works a little bit more in their favor than against them, if that makes any sense.
I agree with that. And going on to second place is Calgary FC, just where the foothills of Calgary. What's your opinion on Calgary FC on this, Holly?
I mean, I think Calgary are pretty much right where they should be. They're always a fun team to watch, an impressive team to watch. Tommy Wilden Jr. is, you know, such a likable person, but also a great coach. And I think, you know, they've been unfortunate in previous seasons, you know, making it to the final, basically winning the regular season in the first, I know there was no regular season winner in the first season, but the spring and fall halves of the season, making it to the final, falling to Forge, and always just being right there, making it in the semifinals, the second season. But so I do think they're always at the top, and they're always where they should be. I always do feel bad for them, because they just miss out. There's just always something either not going in their favor, or just one little piece that's not there for them to make it to the final and to win. I also think, you know, Tommy has kind of been, Tommy and Bobby both have been snubbed of like coach of the year.
Tommy had won once.
Tommy's won one. Bobby has been snubbed quite a few times.
Yeah, Bobby has been. I believe Bobby Smerion is most likely the most snubbed coach of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, honestly, there's potential for him this season if he can really give him that boost, perhaps.
If they could come back to first place.
Yeah, just finally give him a coach of the year. But, you know, Cavalry, like you said, I think they're where they should be. Second place, you know, they're only 4 points behind Pacific, although they did beat them yesterday 2-1. But yeah, I think they're in a good spot, and second place, if not first, would be where I see them finishing at the end of the season.
So what do you think about Calvary FC, Lau?
They're like the definition of always the bridesmaid, but never the bride. It just seems that like they always get right within grasp, and then there's some like a very decisive defensive moment that they flub in the very final bottom of the ninth seems to cost them big. And it's unfortunate to see, but they've always had success, just never to the point of going all the way to the end. It's a really interesting team to see that happen. They're incredibly successful in the league overall, but still, they just can't seem to get that to the end. The second place is obviously, like, silver is never bad. But when you're behind, like I said, the final boss, which is Pacific in my mind, do I see them overtaking them? That's a hard sell for me, but they'll sit comfortably in second place. But it's what happens once they get to the playoffs, and if they can get over some of those, like I said, those decisive defensive moments. If they can figure that problem out, this is a championship-level team, I think. Mm-hmm. It's just whether they're going to actually sign the papers and finish the job.
And now we go to first place Pacific FC on the island of Vancouver Islands. So what do you think about this? Does Pacific FC have that chance to go all the way, Holly?
Absolutely. I think Pacific are, especially right now, pretty heavy favorites to go all the way, be at the top and stay at the top of the table. Pacific made some moves this season, and they were really good ones, and they look amazing offensively. They score goals. James Merriman has done a great job, you know, just signing a new contract, extending his contract just after 50 games in charge. I think what Pacific have and what they've built over the years, you know, is kind of the definition of what the Canadian Premier League is. You know, giving chances to Canadian players, to a Canadian coach, who probably, you know, would have flown under the radar, who has flown under the radar, being second man in most of his career and getting that chance. And, you know, he took over just after Pacific won a championship. And, you know, that's always a difficult feat, but he's kept them there. And, you know, it's pretty impressive, and it's exactly what you want to see from this league.
Yeah, I would basically agree with this. And you had Pablo Ducal, who was a head coach for Pacific FC, led them to winning a championship. And now, I think it was the third season of the Canadian Premier League that ended Forge FC to get the treble. Actually, three-peats, my bad. And now I would think that Pacific FC could actually might win their second title for the Canadian Premier League. And not just that, they might win the regular season and maybe the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lyle, what do you think about this one?
Well, we talked about the opposite side of the coin with consistency, and we talked about Ottawa. This is what you want. When you talk about consistency, you look no further than Pacific. Great young Canadian players, like you said, they've tweaked their core, but they've kept it relatively across the board the same. You're right. I think the hardest thing a coach can do is take over a team right after a huge season, a big win. They still stay right up here. That's incredibly difficult to do. They have young players like Sean Young, big fan of his. I just don't see anybody knocking them off this pedestal. They are up there. It's not a long gap, but I don't think that gap is going to shorten. They're going to continue kind of this run that they're on right now. Definitely going to finish at the top of the table. They're my favorites to win. I know it's the same as the most anybody else out there, but when there's one favorite that's this obvious, it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, I have to agree with this. And I do want to have a question about this on the midseason. What do you think that the Canadian Premier League is most not likely to announce? So I have to give that to Holly on this one.
Most not likely to announce? Well, we know there's going to be an expansion team next year coming into the season, but I don't think there'll be many more moves in the transfer window, which we'll talk about. So I
think that talking about that they're going to bring in the expansion teams most likely to it, but it'll just take that long route of announcing things. They have Windsor coming in. They have Saskatoon coming in. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be that long route of announcing things for Mark Noonan to bring in. So yeah. So Lyle, what do you think about that? Do you think Canada, the Canadian Premier League, might announce anything for long route?
For the longer route, I'll tell you what they definitely won't be announcing, what you asked before. They will definitely announce more expansion teams, but there will not be any more east of Montreal. I can probably bet that. I know that the prairies are their grounds right now, kind of thing. They're looking to get those smaller markets, but as most other sports leagues, they will look at the eastern Canadian side as one giant lump sum. So we probably won't get another team out there other than the Halifax Wanderers, even though they would get the fan support that the Wanderers are getting right now as well.
When I heard about you said about Montreal, I've heard there is some room. There's sources that there might be a expansion team in Quebec City. There was no sources that they wanted to actually have a expansion team in the greater Montreal area. And they said that it was Laval, so they decided it was going to be Quebec City, and they're still waiting for the approval for that expansion team. So I would say that it's going to take a long time for Quebec City to get that expansion team. It's always going to be a market for that, and we could go on to the transfer market. So we heard a lot of transfer markets in the mid-season. So what I've heard, so I could go with, we could go Atletico Ottawa for this one. It's actually something that a lot of fans in Atletico Ottawa were kind of surprised about. This two signings from this one, one from San Fernando and named Ruben Del Campo, and experienced player Alberto Departure from Real Zaragoza, that is 38 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your thoughts on these two players being signed for Atletico Ottawa? So we do have Alberto Zaparto, who has a one-year contract with an option. And keep forgetting that Ruben Del Campo's contract actually is. I think it's a one-year contract with Atletico Ottawa. So what's your thoughts on it, Holly?
I think bringing in a player like Alberto Zaparto is good. He has tons of experience in high-level teams around Europe. Him being 38, obviously, that's up there in any sport. But I think he'll bring what Ottawa needs right now, and that's, a bit more solidity in the midfield, experience, maybe that on-field leader that I think Atletico has kind of been lacking a bit this season. So I think, which both players will be available this weekend to as a selection for the team. So I think, you know, we could possibly see them in the team this weekend. And then Ruben Del Campo, younger player, I believe he's a striker. So, you know, just more goals, hopefully, for Ottawa. We know they have the potential to score goals. They have great goal scorers, but, you know, if goals and wins bring you up the table, and I think that's exactly what they need right now. So hopefully these two signings can really help them halfway through the season.
So Lyle, what do you think about these two signings?
Well, I do agree with Alberto's probably more of the leadership role. Mm-hmm. That somebody, you know, up, we faced Messi. You know, and if somebody's been there, done that, has kind of been more of a journeyman than some of the other people out there on the pitch might be, especially for Ottawa and the position that they're in right now. 38, little bit old, but at the same time, he's at that level. So I don't think age means as much as long as the performance is there. Ruben's the one that's the more interesting one, Del Campo, to me. Started off really, really hot in San Fernando, but then dry spell for a while. Like he was quiet there for a long time. So I think this is kind of trying a little bit of a jump start for him as well as Ottawa, like trying to see what the waters are like and if maybe a change of jersey will help out, kind of get that spark back a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can kind of get some of that form back. It's a great piece for Ottawa if he does. When he first got to San Fernando, he was really good, but we'd have to see if he can get back to that form in the nation's capital here.
Yeah, I completely agree with Ruben Del Campo. That Atletico Ottawa is struggling with scoring goals, and they're minus one in goal differential right now, and mostly not that much goals we're seeing from Malcolm Shaw. He's already in international duties with Trinidad and Tobago. So I think it was a good signing for Atletico Ottawa to find a backup striker for Malcolm Shaw and also find, and then you find an experienced midfielder. And you also, for example, you have also other experienced players with Atletico Ottawa, like, for example, Carl Wimette, and also other players with Atletico Ottawa. And I still see Atletico Ottawa having actual good signings for this one in this market, and I have to give a good mark on this one. So, Calgary FC, they get a player swap with Vancouver FC, with Vancouver FC, Bill Henry, and Michel Katev, and shocking loan they get from Jose Escalante was actually going to be transferred to FC Matoga, but then later it was announced to be a loan. So starting with the player swap with Vancouver FC, what's your reaction to this one?
You know, I actually think it was quite a good swap for what each team needs. Vancouver FC are getting, you know, a dangerous goal scorer in Mickey Kentav, and I think that's also what they need, and they also need, you know, someone who has a bit more experience in general, but also CPL experience. And then Calgary are getting a very young player with potential, and you know, they are currently, as of July 4th, I don't think the minutes have been updated this weekend yet, but they were sitting second last in U21 minutes, which is obviously a very important rule in the CPL. So I think, you know, getting a 19-year-old is kind of exactly what you need to boost that up. And yeah, I think it really benefits both teams for different reasons, but I think it was, you know, not a bad swap, especially.
No question about it. They were in the bottom of the, in the under 21 minutes, and they needed to swap a player that was under that age mark. So it was a good player swap. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that player swap for that, Lau?
Well, yeah, they needed somebody else under 21, right, to reach the league minimum. They needed a kind of a third player there. But it's good that they didn't just go out and get one for the sake of it, which a lot of teams would, just because, like, oh, we won't play them very many minutes anyway. We'll just have them kind of be there on the roster. But he's made 3 appearances already for Vancouver FC. He's already gotten his feet wet. I don't see a downside here for Calgary, really. It's not. 19 years old, to have a little bit of experience under his belt, already coming from a team that is up there in the standings as well, not dead last. I think it's a good for the player and for the team as well. Like you said, it's one of the more even swaps, I think, in a long time for both teams getting kind of exactly what they need here. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good look.
So now the whole drama with Jose Escalante, Jose Escalante went to Honduras. I think he's from Honduras. Mm-hmm. And he actually went to a team, Matoga, and made a deal with a contract. And he did make a statement that he wanted to be more closer to his family. And now Calgary FC had to make this statement about this whole drama that of this transfer market. And thought if it was that all the fans are kind of thinking that, is this actually a transfer deal that you made or something else? But they had to make a statement about this, and they had to make this that it's a loan, but he'll be loaned on for next season, I think, or on the end of contract. So what do you think about this, Holly? This whole drama with Jose Escalante of most likely leaving.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was drama when I first saw. I think the first thing I saw about it was actually a pictures of him signing for a club before I saw Calvary's statement, which was pretty funny. But from what I've heard, it's just a pretty big misunderstanding. So the club, like Calvary, actually gave Escalante a leave of absence because he is a bit homesick. He is from Honduras. I think I read that, you know, he has a family that has been trying to come over to Canada and couldn't. And he has a kid. You know, he's an older player. Obviously, that's not easy on anyone, not being in the same country as your family. So he did get the leave of absence to go back. What had actually happened was Montegua signed. He was contracted to the training rights of Escalante so he could stay fit while he is back home in Honduras. So Calvary was aware of that. But then Montegua came out with a tweet that he had signed a contract for them, which, you know, under FIFA law can't happen. There was no talks with that. There was no official, you know, no official papers signed. So I think it was a bit of a misunderstanding between the two teams. And as of right now, I think Tommy Wilden Jr. was on The Fan in Calgary, and he said talks are still kind of happening between the two teams. He is contracted until the end of this year with Calgary. So they're, you know, he's been a great player for Calgary. He's obviously done a lot of service for them, so they're not going to let him go on a free. I think business-wise, that's obviously not good for Calgary. And, you know, I think Tommy thinks like there needs to be some compensation for both the team and the player for his service there. So he could be going after this year to Montegua. I think, you know, that would be a good fit for him if he wants to play back home in Honduras. But it definitely was quite the shock. Like, not something you'd expect from the Canadian Premier League, being in that type of drama, you know, under all these FIFA rules and everything. But
no question about it, of being behind closed doors,
mm-hmm.
and never hearing about this. It's really, really kind of shocking that Jose Escalante had to announce this, that he signed a contract behind closed doors with the team. So that it's really shocking. So Lyle, what do you think about that?
I think it's just like Holly said. When you find out about something from seeing the pictures of it before the official team release, that's when you know stuff is off the rails and the team doesn't necessarily know what's going on. But I feel bad for Escalante specifically more than anybody because he's just caught in the middle of all this. Yeah. Not his fault. He just wants to go home and play closer to his family. Nobody can ever blame anybody for that. I think that's the logic. If that's what a player with his pedigree wants, I think that's what he should get. Obviously not for nothing. There has to be some kind of transaction here on the Calvary's end to get their money's worth kind of thing. But it's a no-brainer. Like, you want to keep a star like that happy. Let him go home. Let him play closer. But the fact that somehow the wires got crossed here and there was a 5-minute period there where nobody really knew what was going on. And like you said, it's not very typical of the Canadian Premier League to be in that position. They're much more astute, I think, with their news and their releases and stuff. It's very careful. There's not a lot of drama. So when it does pop up, it unfortunately sticks out like a sore thumb. So I feel really bad for him, and I hope he does get to go home and play closer to family. That can't be easy being an entire continent away from the people you love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope Jose Escalante gets an agreement on this one and safely goes home and leave Mazzaraga in Honduras. I keep forgetting the country's name, Honduras.
Yeah, Honduras.
Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. So, Calvary, I could go with now York United with it. York United just transfer for Lasana Faye, who's going to Netherlands in the second division league. And now hearing Ronan Krat now basically had a loan for the reserve team for Werder Bremen. And now he's now made it official that he's going to stay there. So what's on the thoughts on the transfers that are leaving for York United?
I mean, I think it's always great to see players moving on and going to European sides. Like I said before, like, this is another thing exactly what you want from the Canadian Premier League. That's what it's for. It's giving Canadian players, not only Canadian players, giving players a chance to play in this league, show off their talent, prove any points they want to prove, and move on. You know, Werder Bremen is in the Bundesliga, like, that, and someone from York United is going to the Bundesliga, like, that's exactly what you want to see. And, you know, the Netherlands second division is, you know, quite impressive as well. So I think these are things that, these are the reasons why the Canadian Premier League exists. It's for these opportunities, these chances for players to showcase themselves and move on. And when they do, you know, it's what you want to see.
Well, usually York United has been that whole history of selling their players for a long time in their team. No question about it. And so Lyle, what do you think about that? York United.
Well, Faye is the one that, like, you obviously feel bad. The reason he asked for a transfer request is because of a family situation back home. That's why he's going to the Dutch second division there. So you're always going to wonder what if there. What if that didn't happen and what if he stayed? But again, it's another situation where if somebody asks to go home, give them that. Let them go. Because they're just going to be happier somewhere else. And like you touched on, it's never a bad thing to send players from your league up a step higher. Because it puts the league on the map in the long run. Because now on the back of the stat card, it's going to say that he was in the Canadian Premier League, and that's what launched him up to there. So it's unfortunate that a family situation had to take Faye back there. But it's good for the league in general to have more kind of branching out into others. Like you said, people going to the Bundesliga. That's amazing because it elevates this league even more.
Yeah, and now Vancouver FC, you have a player swap, which we had to mention with about Calvary FC. And now it's a big one I think Pacific FC knows that they had. It's a loney that actually plays for Norway. Alejandro Wilde Diaz, which basically was announced a few days ago. So, Holly, what do you think about this? Diaz coming back.
I mean, Alejandro Diaz was a a phenomenal player for Pacific FC. You know, he was in the race to win Golden Boot before he left, and I think he did he even still win after he left to go to Norway?
I think he won it last year.
Yeah, he won it and he wasn't even part of the league anymore. You know, I think for Vancouver, I mean, obviously it's a made up rival. They're not really rivals yet, Vancouver FC and Pacific, but you know, as far as closeness, I guess they are. So him going back to a rival, I think that kind of that might boost the rivalry a little bit. But I think obviously it's a great pickup for Vancouver FC. Might be something they need, something they're lacking. Again, more experience, especially in general, but especially in the CPL. So I think, you know, that's a great pickup for Vancouver.
It was kind of hilarious that Alejandro Diaz is just like, I'm still the holder for goals, and I just left the mid of the season.
He's all the way in Norway and got his trophy shipped off to him, I guess.
So what are your thoughts on this one, Lyle?
I think it's another one that's great for both parties, because last year's Golden Boot winner, like you said, the most goals for Pacific SC. But at the same time, he wasn't really getting regular minutes in Norway. So not necessarily underappreciated. There's just a lot of talent in Norway. So he's coming back to kind of be that like bigger fish in a slightly smaller pond, which is good for him. And talk about a shot in the arm for Vancouver, who very much needs it right now. As we said before, they're stuck in that kind of limbo-ish middle part. So there's no downside for anybody here, I don't think. It's a really good look. Great to see him back. It's hilarious that he got the trophy despite not even being on the continent at the time. Like, that just goes to show you the caliber here. So it's a great pickup for Vancouver. I don't think anybody will be complaining about this, Diaz included.
No question about it. And by the way, Alejandro Diaz is still young as a striker. So sooner or later, maybe Vancouver FC might pick him up soon if they want to. So maybe sooner or later we'll see more on the transfer market of the Canadian Premier League into this. So thinking about Canadian players of it, we've seen, for example, Victor Lautori that has been transferred, and even Dominic Zator, also another Canadian that has been transferred, went to Poland, according to Kielce, and even Joel, former Calgary FC, Joel Waterman, goes to Club de Foot Montreal. Now, and he was also a person that went to the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have these players now being in the Canadian national team. We'll talk about now the national team of their performance, how they stand out of the group stage. So, Holly, Canada performance of the group stage of the Gold Cup. What is your thoughts?
You know, not great. Not great. I think them getting out of the group is, like, it was, I'm not going to say luck, but it was, you know, the chances were slim. Looking ahead of this, going into the Cuba game, they needed a win, and they needed a big win, and they also needed the result in the Guatemala-Guadeloupe game to be a certain way for them to advance, get either first or second. They ended up getting second in the group. You know, their first two games, you get a 2-2 draw and a goalless draw. But they did not look good. They did not look good, and they were shaky in the midfield. They were leaky in the back. I just think we have... I don't want to, like, you know, bash them too much, but I think we have this expectation now with the Canadian men's national team because of their rise and because of the things they've done, you know, World Cup qualifying, topping CONCACAF, being, you know, claimed the Kings of CONCACAF, making it to the Nations League final. They've done a lot in recent years, and I think our expectations are up here, but we still have to be realistic. They're still a young team, a developing team, and a lot of players. The roster for going into the Gold Cup was a lot different than what we're maybe been used to recently. So we also have to, you know, kind of give a little leeway, I think, to how they've been performing. But obviously, beating Cuba, making it out of the group is good. That's what they should have done. They probably should have finished first, in my opinion. But, you know, their first two games weren't too good. But now, playing USA tonight, I don't know. This is now knockout football. It's one and done. I don't have that much confidence going into that game.
Well, no question about it when Canada's going to be versing USA. So when the whole thing about the group stage versing Guadalupe, which was their home event in Toronto at BMO Field, you have a small country coming in, and fans were like, how could you actually draw to this team? We always think there are nobodies at this time. And you let an own goal at that time, and it was all over the place. Yeah. I would say, in my opinion, of that match. And then the second match, Guatemala, scoreless. It was also, my opinion, not a good match. It was that you didn't have a good play to make. It's just like, are we playing like what we did in the Nations League? And you already think, we don't have our key players. No longer Atiba Hutchinson. We know we have a new roster and so on. And now you're limping all the way, trying to make that second spot. Always thinking about that Guatemala versus Guadalupe, how they're going to play. And you're trying to score, who's going to score the most goals in that match? So in Canada versus Cuba. And yeah, they limped all the way to win it 4-2. So Lau, what do you think about the whole Canada national team versus in the Gold Cup performance in the group stage?
I was there for that own goal, and let me tell you, that took the air out of that stadium like a hot air balloon crashing into a power line. Everybody was so happy because, like, it was a game they should have had in the bag easily. Everybody there at the beginning of the match, we were all just like, well, this is in the bag. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have been, because that's what loses you games when you go in like that. But we were so sure. I went with a bunch of people from my work, and we were so sure. That's why we bought the tickets, because they're like, there's no way they're going to lose. Of course, up 2-1, I think it was 4 minutes to the end of the game, too, when that own goal went in. And it just completely deflated that stadium. And I think that's a good way to sum up this entire stage of this tournament, has been deflating. Canada soccer is under such a microscope right now because of the success they've been having over recent years. Should have been under a microscope the whole time because the women's team's been rocking for like a decade now. But the fact that the men's team did well, obviously that brings so many more eyes to the product. So the national teams are under so much scrutiny. Now is when they have to be firing on all cylinders. You want to make this as big of a deal as you can. Advertise the heck out of that BMO Field game. It was a pretty well full crowd. Like, I didn't see very many empty seats there. They did very well getting attendance, which is sometimes a struggle at BMO to get football attendance that isn't the Argonauts, Canadian Football League. It was such a full crowd. Everybody was having a great time. As soon as that own goal went in, you almost felt the whole tournament go shh. And the hype level went down because they were like, if this can happen, what's going to happen the next game? So then the 0-0 draw, that was the punch to the stomach. Because after the one draw that you let happen, now you go scoreless. Yes, we beat Cuba, limped, just like you said, limped our way into this round against the U.S., but that's how we did in the group stage. Now we're staring down the barrel of the United States, which you know is going to be the hardest test that they've had. It's going to be a hard sell, especially in knockout now, like you said. It was a fun game to watch, and I'm glad I went, but at the same time, it makes you sad of what could have been, because they should have had those first two games. I really believe it.
I was even glad to watch that match, but it was always fun to see Canada versus other countries at the time, even for other events. But some have their own opinions. They should have won. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I actually do agree with that. They should have won that match. But it's always competitive. It's always that. It is the Gold Cup. It's not the Nations League anymore. It was 2-0. Everyone knows that match, USA versus Canada. So now we're seeing I know that I would have to bring the women's national team going into the World Cup. So what do you think of the Women's World Cup
of Canada, how they're going to go all the way. Do you think that they have their chance to win this one?
Do I think Canada... I think they have a chance to do well. But, you know, there are a lot of good teams in the World Cup. Obviously, it's a lot different. The stage is bigger. The stakes are higher. I think they have the potential to do very well in their group. Very recently, within the last year, they have played friendlies against Australia and Nigeria both. Showed great potential in both matches against either team. So I do think they could either top or come second in their group. And then once it gets down to the nitty gritty, you know, there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes with Canada soccer, you know, especially I think right now towards the women's teams, finding deals and, you know, trying to make everyone happy, which is always very, very difficult. I think we saw, you know, earlier this year that the off the field stuff had played a big part with how they played on the field during the She Believes Cup, you know, almost wanting to protest, couldn't really. There was, you know, there's legal stuff with teams wanting to protest and not play. But, you know, it showed in the She Believes Cup. And I think when these stuff are in the back of your mind and you're trying to play a game, especially in a tournament where you're trying to win, it becomes even more difficult. It's more added pressure. And I think they obviously want to do well. And I think they will, and they do have the potential to make it far in the tournament. But, you know, I want to see how all this stuff plays out beforehand. And there's only a couple weeks before the tournament actually kicks off. I think a temporary deal will be made before they go into the World Cup. And obviously there's going to be lots of talks when they come back. So, yeah, I think Canada always has the potential to do well. But I think now it's a little different this year with all this background noise.
Yeah, I agree with that. When you have a lot of things that you're focused on with the whole drama with the Canadian soccer, there could be some things that will kind of have a roadblock and really bother you during the match of it. And whole thing of the drama with Canada soccer, it could go all downhill with all this women's soccer with it. You have still Sinclair, right? Christine Sinclair is still in the whole Canada soccer, and Jamie Becky and all the other ones playing for it. And sooner or later, they're going to announce the roster for the national team for the World Cup. And I hope they have a good roster for it. And I agree they might be second spot in for their group stage. And hoping how they do well in the elimination round in the World Cup. So Lyle, what do you think about this?
It breaks my heart. The whole thing kind of breaks my heart because you have this team who has represented Canada so well in so many international competitions, the gold medal games, and it's just they were Canada soccer for a long time. The women's team was Canada soccer. There was no men's team for a long time. People seem to forget this, that Sinclair was holding the flag for near a decade. It was just them. So the fact that somehow they run into funding issues just when Canada soccer has more eyes on it than ever, now all of a sudden the women's team is running into issues with their own organization pushing back against them. Now is not the time to do this. Like, now's the time to be thanking these players for, like, kind of holding the fort until everybody else caught up to their level. So it's unfortunate that they're going into a World Cup, which they always have a chance at. When they have this team, until Sinclair retires, until that core group leaves, they have a chance, I believe. But you're right. How can you go out and play for an organization that pushes back against you? You're protesting your own organization at the She Believes Cup, trying to wear jerseys. You have them. No, you can't do that. You have to wear our logo. Like, that's a horrible situation to be in for anybody at any level of sport, to be going out and thinking, man, I hate the fact that I have this logo on me right now because the suits in the back don't like us. Mm-hmm. It's an awful situation. I feel so bad for the players because they deserve so much more respect than that. And I would love for them to go out into this World Cup and put on an absolute show and bring the trophy home, even if they don't like the organization, just to spite them. Just to say, we don't need the funding because we're so good, we can just go in and win it. That's a perfect world for me. Obviously, they have a chance. I think second place in their group is probably the bullseye. That's probably where they'll end up. They did have those friendly matches. They went undefeated across four of them. They only had one draw there too. But Nigeria and Australia, a little bit of a different story when you get to the World Cup and you're playing other teams of a much higher caliber. Mm-hmm. They have a chance, but I just hope the backstage politics don't derail them too much.
Yeah, and that's full time for this episode of the Red Leaf Card. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm your host, Jacob, subbing out.